Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Catherine Stewart, a journalist whose recent work has appeared in The New York Times, The Nation, The Atlantic, and The Guardian. She's the author of The Good News Club, The Christian Right's Stealth Assault on America's Children, and she has an op-ed at The New York Times, What the Government Schools Critics Really Mean. Welcome to Background Briefing, Catherine Stewart.
Thank you so much for having me.
And in your New York Times article, Catherine, you mentioned that President Trump's school choice, his budget for school choice, would cut more than $9 billion for overall education spending, but he also wants to put money into charter schools and voucher programs. And in announcing this budget, Trump talked about the failing government schools. So he used that phrase, government schools, and that is a loaded term, and there's a history to it. So let's talk about that. It's a loaded term, and tell us about the history.
Well, it certainly is a loaded term, and in certain conservative circles, that term, government schools, has become really quite ubiquitous. And I think a lot of people fail to understand that there's a certain segment of the evangelical world that has never accepted public education as a legitimate enterprise to begin with. They think that public schools are secular and they're going to turn their children away from their religion. And they therefore would like to sort of destroy the public schools. And, you know, it's actually kind of part of a two-pronged strategy. I write about this a lot in my book. A lot of religious right wants to put force their programs into the public schools through after-school clubs and through history textbooks that promote a Christian nationalist version of American history, and by promoting creationism in public schools and things like that. But it's part of really a two-pronged strategy. They want to sort of force their programs into the public schools, but have, I think, arrived at this idea that a better means of the attack would be to destroy public schools altogether by stripping them of funding through voucher programs and unregulated charters. And this is where you hear a lot of the language about government schools.
Well, some of it, of course, is extraordinarily hyperbolic, but nevertheless, I'm sure heartfelt by some of these zealots that that these government schools are prisons for poor children, that they're government indoctrination camps.
Yes,
that's
language that you hear today in a lot of the right-wing policy institutes that are funded either directly or indirectly by the DeVos family. Her family funded the funds the Mackinac Center, the Acton Institute, and the Heartland Institute, and articles appear in their websites and through their publications sort of decrying government schools, as you said, command and control mentality, prisons for poor children, and things like that. You know, the vitriol has a real pedigree. When many leaders of the Christian right talk about public schools, it's hard to believe that they're talking about the same places that our kids, you know, learn their ABCs and their multiplication tables. But the fury from the Christian nationalists is so total and uncompromising. It's hard to imagine that it could be satisfied by anything short of destruction of the system. It goes all the way back to 19th century theologians such as A.A. Hodge, who was at Princeton Seminary, who predicted in 1890 that public education would become he called an efficient and wide instrument for the propagation of atheism. He wrote, "I am as sure as I am as of Christ's reign that a comprehensive and centralized system of national as education will prove the most appalling engineery for the propagation of anti-Christian and atheistic unbelief and antisocial nihilistic ethics." And this kind of rhetoric has been continued on by other sort of leaders of the religious right. Rush Dooney, who was one of the leaders of Dominionism, this idea that government, all aspects of government, should be overtaken by control of Christians like himself, said something like, you know, evolutionary, socialistic, one world. It's chaos, primitivism, and a vast integration into the void. D. James Kennedy, whose ministry received over $5.5 million from the Prince DeVos family, said in 1986, the infusion of an atheistic, amoral, evolutionary, one-world anti-American system of education at public schools has become such, if it had been done by an enemy, it would be considered an act of war. That's actually a quote that gets repeated over and over and over. It was repeated very recently by Anita Staver, who is the, I believe she's the president of Liberty Council, one of the sort of right-wing Christian legal advocacy groups that's always arguing, you know, behind the cases like Hobby Lobby and things like that. So this kind of rhetoric, anti-public education rhetoric, has a long pedigree, and it's never, frankly, I don't think it's ever been louder than it is today.
And it's got a champion who's the Secretary of Education. And again, I'm speaking with Catherine Stewart, a journalist whose recent work has appeared in the New York Times, The Nation, The Atlantic, and The Guardian. She's the author of The Good News Club, The Christian Right Stealth Assault on America's Children, and has an op-ed at The New York Times, What the Government Schools Critics Really Mean. So let's talk about your book. And it came about because you had a personal experience, right, that your kids were being indoctrinated. In 2009, The Good News Club came to the public elementary school where your kids were, and they were sponsored by the Child Evangelism Fellowship, which bills itself as an after-school program for Bible study, but it was anything but. So walk us through that personal experience.
Well, yes, thank you for mentioning that. I really wasn't tuned into this issue about the religious rights attack on public education until a Good News Club, I discovered a Good News Club was coming to our daughter's public elementary school. And frankly, at first, I just thought, wow, that's great. What could be wrong with a group with such a very nice name? And but I discovered that the group it seeks to indoctrinate very young children in evangelical Christianity by confusing them into thinking, really deceiving them into thinking that the religion of the club is sponsored by the school. They target children in the very first years of learning, ages 5 and 6 years old. The centerpiece of their program is called a wordless book. It's got no picture, no words, just pictures and shapes and colors, and it's used to convert children who are too young to read. And little kids have, we're talking little kids here, that public schools have a cloak of authority in their minds. They think if something is taught in their school, it must be sponsored by their school. It must be what their school wants them to believe. They can't make a distinction between something that's taught in their school and something that's sponsored by their school. And the Good News Club leaders know that very well. That's why they're so insistent on putting these clubs in public schools where they're going to be targeting very, very young children. So in our community in Santa Barbara, a group of parents got together, evangelical parents, by the way, who are, you know, share some of the beliefs of the Good News Club leaders, but didn't think that the club was right for our school because they knew how divisive and inappropriate it was. So they offered the club leaders free space in a church literally next door to the school, the Montecito Covenant Church. It's an evangelical church, very beautiful. The Good News Club leaders declined, and they insisted on being in the public school. So I started to ask questions like, why do they want to be in the public schools? You know, what is the religion of the Good News Club? And, you know, what are their goals for our community and our schools? And, you know, I discovered that they are part of that sector of the religious right that really wants to exploit public schools by using them to promote their religion and deceive children into thinking that the school supports this kind of Christian nationalist agenda.
But, you know, and of course, the dominionism, which is what you're referring to there, is that's Rush Dooney's legacy. It actually came up a little bit in the last election. Ted Cruz's father is a dominionist. You can't argue that they've been that successful, but you can make the case, as indeed you do in your New York Times article, Catherine Stewart, that the history of these so-called attacks on these attacks on these so-called government schools go back to before the Jim Crow era, but they were accelerated during the Jim Crow era. And before the Civil War, the South was largely free of public schools. And then during Reconstruction, this Confederate Army chaplain, Robert Lewis Dabney, led this attack on government schools. I see it in a broader context, and that is, you know, that the public schools are the sort of last sort of legacy of social democracy that we have left in this country, and that the South, of course, being somewhat feudal with the plantation economy, is now the home of the Republican Party. There's been, you know, they didn't even have public schools, as you point out, before the Civil War, but they've been hostile, and that's where most of this hostility via religion that you're talking about is, that you can actually trace the destruction of public education in this country to the rise of the American plutocracy that now threatens democracy itself.
Well, it's really interesting that you make that link. It's true that today, 90% of American children attend public schools, and for many citizens, the schools provide their most basic form of engagement with democracy. They call them government schools, but they're not run by the big bad government. In fact, our school boards are locally elected, and for many people, engagement with the public schools and the whole and the town or cities that they live in, it's the most direct form of engagement with our democratic principles. Local boards we elect and and taxation with representation that they support have proved to be not the engine of atheism, but frankly, of a thriving middle class, if you look at the broad sweep of history. So the government schools crowd really is seeking to persuade us that our own democracy and the tools of our democracy, the tools of our own democracy are maligned.
Well, that's why the DeVos family and the Koch brothers have something in common. The Koch brothers want to get rid of public education because they're fanatical libertarians who don't believe that there should be a government role in anything, and they should be unfettered to mm-hmm. do what they want to do. And the DeVos people have a similar sort of plutocratic outlook, but I think they're more motivated. I mean, the Kochs are somewhat secular, but the DeVos people are quite imbued with religious zeal, are they not?
Yes, they are. In fact, Betsy DeVos, you know that she's at the intersection of two families that have funded the radical Christian right. In 1983, her father, Edgar Prince, contributed to the creation of the Family Research Council, which the Southern Poverty Law Center identifies as extremist because of its anti-LGBT language. Her father-in-law has been funding groups and causes on the economic and religious right since the 1970s. Now, this is something that she probably wishes that people weren't that aware of, but a 2001 gathering of conservative Christian philanthropists called The Gathering, she singled out education reform, you know, the sort of what they call school choice, as a way to, quote, advance God's kingdom. In an interview, she and her husband, Dick DeVos Jr., said that school choice would lead to what they called greater kingdom gain. So they're kind of quiet about that aspect of their focus. In fact, I believe that her husband, Dick DeVos Jr., said at one point, we have to be, you know, kind of, I'm going to paraphrase him. He said we need to be kind of quiet about this agenda. It was in a 2002 lecture to the Heritage Foundation, but I don't have the exact language on me. But this is part of their purpose of involving themselves in public education.
And at the end of the day, you know, it's against science, it's against intellectual curiosity, it's against rationality and reason, and it could have dire consequences for this country, if it hasn't already, because as Thomas Jefferson said, an ignorant people cannot remain a free people.
Yes, it's one of my favorite quotes.
It is?
Thank you for saying that. It's true. It is. You know, when they say freedom, when they bemoan our government indoctrination camps that threaten our nation's very survival, and, talk about the importance of freedom, what they really want is freedom from democracy itself. And I think that this idea that any kind of democratic institutions or democratic engagement by the citizenry is dangerous for them. It goes back again to that time when you had that Reverend Dabney and was arguing against public education so forcefully. The interesting thing about Dabney is he goes on and on. You know, he really dislikes public education, but what he really, really dislikes is freedom of is for this, you know, is equality. He was an absolute avid defender of slavery in essay after essay after essay, and I wouldn't really repeat some of the things that he said about enslaved people, because they were just really hateful and horrific. But he was a devotee of Calhoun, that great Confederate, and they were the reason why they hated democracy, because they felt like it interfered with their property rights as people who had the right to enslave others. I mean, this is really where a lot of that comes from. And if you want to defend slavery and absolute brutal inequality, of course you're going to hate education.
Well, Catherine Stewart, I thank you very much for joining us here today. We've run out of time, but I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Catherine Stewart, a journalist whose recent work has appeared in The New York Times, The Nation, The Atlantic, and The Guardian. She's the author of The Good News Club, The Christian Right's Stealth Assault on America's Children, and she has an op-ed at The New York Times, What the Government School's Critics Really Mean. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.